This is Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City. Yeah, here on the NOLA Drink Show, friends, we are always focused on helping our fellow Americans in need and not distracted by fighting with the NFL using a catchphrase, "You're fired," to tell someone else who to employ, when apparently inappropriate use of private planes is not enough to make use of said catchphrase in your own house. All while telling Americans that their First Amendment right to protest and to define the narrative of why they're protesting is un-American. You should be sacked. Oh, hey, there's our new catchphrase. How do you like it? Anyway, hey, we got a great show coming up for you here today. Speaking of helping fellow Americans, part of the show that we have going on, we're going to talk about hurricane relief and an event going on Sunday, taking place here in town at Treo, which is located at 3835 Tulane Avenue. And the focus of this particular fundraiser is to help folks who are victims of Hurricane Harvey. Yeah, remember that one? A couple hurricanes ago, and we'll be getting into the Irma stuff and the Maria stuff and these sorts of things as we move forward. But as we know here in New Orleans, and many of you probably know if you're listening elsewhere, that there's the long slog that starts to happen after an area needs to recover from a natural disaster like this. So what's going on, obviously, in Southeast Texas and Southwest Louisiana, of course, from Hurricane Harvey, is the long rebuild, rebuilding your life, rebuilding your business, rebuilding everything. You know, this is when houses are getting gutted or have been gutted. You got to replace sheetrock, all these things. And typically what happens is in a lot of these places, and we know this in New Orleans, that folks in the service industry and hospitality industry are hit particularly hard because they're not, you know, they're dependent on tips. They're not making tips. Those wages aren't coming in. The venues in which they work are not back up. A lot of folks in the service industry are underinsured, these sorts of things. So this whole benefit coming up at Treo, it's called the Bartender's Handshake. We explain what that means in the interview. This is the second hour of the show, is basically to help folks in the service industry in the areas affected by Harvey. Now, what I want to make very clear is people going, hey, Harvey, that happened a while ago. Like I just said, there's Irma, Maria, a couple earthquakes in Mexico, of course, these things that we all need to be concerned about and help all of our neighbors. Yes, is that we'll get there. This is a part where that consistent through that mid-range kind of rebuild, I'll say, not the short term. That's already come and gone. Now we're in the midterm, and we got to help out these folks that that need that help. So this particular fundraiser is coming up, and we're going to talk a lot about that. We are joined by Tyler Chauvin, who is the beverage director there at Treo, and then also Cold Newton, who is the proprietor of 12 Mile Lemon and the vice president of the United States Bartenders Guild New Orleans chapter, two of the organizers of the event taking place. We'll talk about that. And then we're also in the first hour here coming up after the break, we chat with Eric Morningstar, who is the head distiller of the fairly new, about 7 months old, I believe, if I remember correctly, 7-3 Distilling, which is right there essentially in the Treme, 301 North Claiborne. Very nice facility. We got a chance to take a tour. Eric took us around earlier in the week, and really nice tasting room they got going on in there, and some making some good stuff, some nice vodka, some nice gin. They've got a blended whiskey coming up here pretty quick, some other things to pay attention for, moonshine. And so we went out there, talked with Eric a little bit, got a tour, sat in the tasting room. So we recorded a little bit with Eric while we were out there talking about what they're up to at 7-3 Distilling. And we mentioned the name. Yeah, of course, if you're here in New Orleans, you probably know the 73 official neighborhoods as the city recognizes. Now, I think a lot of us like to argue about what those actually are and what they mean and where somebody might tell you where you live or where you think you live. But anyway, that's a side story. So that's going to be a lot of fun. So stay tuned for that. So again, coming up after the break, 7-3 Distilling. And then in the second hour, we will chat with the folks putting on the Bartender's Handshake fundraiser coming up on Sunday. Want to mention a couple other events, friends, coming up in town, not to be missed this weekend, taking place Saturday in the Lakeview neighborhood is Taste at the Lake there in Lakeview. And I always want to say Taste of the Lake, but I think it was a pretty good branding decision to say Taste at the Lake. I don't, even though I know that the water and Lake Pontchartrain is a lot better than it used to be, I still don't think it's going to taste very good. All right. Just saying. But Taste at the Lake coming up this Saturday. Some great music. Soul Rebels, the Crooked Vines. There's going to be some great food and drinks. So how it works is that it's, as I said, Saturday, September 30th from 6 to 10 p.m. It's at 135 Robert E. Lee Boulevard. General admission opens at 7 o'clock, $40 in advance, $45 at the gate. And patron tickets, that opens at 6. You get a special hour from 6 to 7. Those are $90 in advance and $100 at the gate. And it's put on by Friends of Lakeview, the neighborhood, and they're also, and it's part of this Lakeview Civic Improvement Association, and what they try and do is identify capital programs that the neighborhood needs and can benefit from. In this case, it looks like they're working to fund some new lighting along a bike path over there, and yeah, and they're working on that. They're actually pretty close to getting that done, it sounds like, or getting it approved. It's basically running some lighting along the running and bike path that goes from Veterans Boulevard to Robert E. Lee Boulevard between West End and Pontchartrain Boulevards. It's alongside the new Basin Canal Park. So cool stuff. That's what they're doing, what they're fundraising for. Again, lots of good music, food, drink, a lot of good fun. So Saturday, 6 to 10, 135 Robert E. Lee Boulevard there in Lakeview. Taste at the Lake. Yep, Jazz and the Vines coming up at Pontchartrain Vineyards to the north, same evening, right about the same time. Unfortunately, you're going to have to choose between one or the other, and I'm not going to tell you which one to choose. They're both good. Can't go wrong. Jazz and the Vines' second concert of the outdoor concert series taking place at our local winery here in the New Orleans area and up in Bush, Louisiana, just north of Covington. And it's the fantastic Shannon Powell Quartet. Of course, Shannon Powell is the famous New Orleans drummer and band leader, plays with Preservation Hall Jazz Band. Need I say any more? Been around for a long time. And he does traditional stuff. His quartet's more kind of like funk and R&B and that sort of thing. And that's who he's bringing the quartet act up to, Pontchartrain Vineyards. That's going to be a fun event, 6:30 to 9, with gates opening at 5. Individual tickets available at the gate for $10 a person. But there is a special offer. You can get two adult admissions and a bottle of wine. You can choose from their off-dry white wine, the Rue St. Louis, or the Rosé, just slightly off-dry, and also fruity called Zydeco Rosado. So you have to choose between one of those two. But two tickets and a bottle of wine for $25. Now, here's the thing. It's online only, and online ticket sales end at 3 o'clock on Saturday before the show. So you cannot get that offer at the gate. You can only get it online. Okay, up until 3 p.m., two tickets and a choice of one of those two wines for $25. If not, hey, just show up, buy an individual ticket at the gate for $10. They have food trucks out there, wine for sale, you can taste. It's a lot of fun, 6:30 to 9 there at the winery. That's going to be pretty cool. Just go check out PontchartrainVineyards.com for more information on that. Another dinner coming up. It's actually going to be a week from today if you're listening on the radio, or less than that if you're listening on the podcast. You figure that one out, as I always say. It is taking place next Thursday, October 5th. I want to make sure I mention it now, because by the time next week's show rolls around, you know, probably going to be too late. But Thursday evening over, our good friends at Cavern Restaurant, Uptown 3607 Magazine Street, are putting on a special sake dinner. And if you listen to the show on a regular basis, and I hope you do, you know, we're big fans of sake. We did an interview from Tales of the Cocktail a while back with a gentleman who mostly talked about shochu, which is a distillate. Sake, of course, is a fermented beverage. People mistakenly say rice wine. It's not exactly wine. It's brewed. Anyway, whatever. It's brewed. But so we talked about that. We talked mostly about shochu with him, but he's also a sake expert teacher. So anyway, point is that we're a big fan of that beverage, and we think it goes great with the food here, right? A little bit of spice and some things like that. And the world of sake is huge, the different styles and these things coming from Japan. So this particular dinner, the beverage director there, Noel Wilcox, good pal of ours here at the show, is a big fan of sake. And so they're doing a four-course meal that she's put together in working with our good buddy over there, who's the executive chef, Nathan Richard. And so four-course meal, $75 per person, pretty reasonable, I would say. And everything is paired with a particular style of sake that Nicole has put together. So I don't believe there's a particular time for the dinner. You can make reservations by calling 504-509-7655, or you can shoot an email over there to Roger Isles. Roger is the GM over there, just Roger at Cavan, C-A-V-A-N, NOLA, N-O-L-A, .com. Again, four-course sake dinner. And, you know, Nathan does a lot of Cajun style cooking and things, which I think is going to go great. So there's a brie en croûte with smoked apple butter, crisp oyster spaghetti with squid ink and bacon, interesting lamb lollipops with a moulet rouge and a black sesame pudding and passion fruit curd for dessert. So some pretty interesting stuff, maybe not super Cajun there, but going to be really great with the paired sake stuff. So do check that out. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the show. Again, we're going to chat with 7-3 Distilling, Eric Morningstar, head distiller there, and then we're going to chat with Tyler Chauvin of Trejo and Cole Newton of 12 Mile Limit, putting on the Bartender's Handshake fundraiser, benefiting Hurricane Harvey victims this Sunday. You do want to check that out. And then we'll be back to close the show out in a little while with some other stuff. So, hey, friends, come on back to the show.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Noel Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you are. Thanks for tuning into the show. As always, as you know, as we talked about at the top of the show, we are here at 7-3 Distilling, right here at 300 block of North Claiborne, and pleased to be joined by Eric Morningstar, distiller here, master distiller here at 7-3.
Yep, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for the tour, Eric, earlier this afternoon.
No problem. No problem at all.
Yeah, great. So you and I met a few weeks back. You were representing the distillery and pouring some of your product there at the Martin Wine Cellar in Mandeville, and we got to chatting.
Yeah, definitely. So it's a good time. Good time. I get to do that every now and again. They let me out, you know, they unchain me from the still and let me go talk to people.
Right. When we got here today, you were the only person here.
Yeah.
And as you kept saying, we were having a good laugh about this because you were referring to, we do this. You went, wait a minute, I.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of people on the team, a lot of people that, you know, that do a lot of things behind the scenes. But for the most part right now, it's a small team. So I'm the one in charge of making the stuff and running the still and working on the mash tun. So it's, you know, we're looking for people, you know, but it takes some time. And you know, once we get the ball rolling, we'll expand. But
right now, how long have you been open, Eric?
So it's been about 7 months. So we're very, very new. And I, you know, I came down here for this job, so I'm very new on the scene and figuring stuff out.
Well, let's do this. Let's talk a little bit about the company, because I do want to get into your background as well. But so you opened up about 7 months ago. You're here on North Claiborne, as I mentioned. Who started the place?
So the owners are Sal and Eileen Bevilacqua, and also, Jeff Rogers is a partner in the business, and they were the ones that came up with the idea and kind of got everything set up. Did a lot of the heavy lifting before I came on board, getting the graphic design, our beautiful bottles and labels all set up, and then they were looking for somebody to run the equipment, and they found me. I happened to be looking for other work and came down.
It came down. Yeah. So what as far as you know anyway, what prompted Sal and Eileen, I'm sorry, what was the other partner's name?
Jeff.
Jeff. What Jeff. Prompted Sal, Eileen, and Jeff to open a distillery? And it's okay. If you don't know, you don't know.
It's kind of a complicated story.
Oh, but, okay.
But Jeff and Sal were childhood friends, and Jeff was working with someone else who was in the process of starting a vodka distillery, and Sal kind of took over the project and went full force, and you know, dove in head first and really. Really took it on and pushed it and continues to push, you know, to make it, you know, amazing. So
it wasn't reason why I always ask this question is sometimes, you know, it's a family tradition or family business or something like that, but more just coming from an interest of wanting to own a distillery, it sounds like. And
yeah, I mean, it isn't, you know, they're not, they're not makers in their own right. Mm-hmm. But they really have a desire to, you know, to take this on and make it, you know, make it amazing and build it into a great business.
So you now let's talk a little bit about you then. So you moved down here. Where'd you move from?
I moved from Michigan.
Okay. And you were working, working as a distiller.
Yeah.
Also,
I was working as a head distiller at another distillery in Detroit.
Okay, great. So. And how long did you, let's start at the beginning. How did you get into being a distiller?
So this is the third place that I've worked for. I started a very, very small mom and pop operation in very far northern Michigan, and I seem to keep moving further and further south. I don't think there's much further I can go now. I'm kind of all the way at the bottom there. I'm not at the bottom. I'm at the top, kind of. But
you can go make rum in Central America.
Right. That is true. That is true. But, you know, if I want to... I don't know if it'll be much hotter, actually. It seems like... But yeah, I started working for a small mom-and-pop shop, starting running very, very simple equipment. Kind of was just doing it for fun. And
what got you into it? Did you go to school for this, or was it just kind of an interest? And how did that happen?
It was just started out kind of as an interest. And in Michigan, Michigan State University has a distilling program. And I actually started before they really actually got that up and running. They had some sort of workshops that they were doing, and that's how. The mom and pop shop got started. They got the interest in that, and I was able to work with them and take advantage of the knowledge from MSU, and just through experimentation is the main way, you know. I found I had a knack for it, and that always helps. And then from there, I started working with a company in Detroit that was working with Dave Pickerel, who is the or was, I should say, head distiller at Maker's Mark. And now he's you know, has his fingers in a lot of different pies, and just making his own whiskey, working as a consultant. So I was able to learn a lot from him and really kind of, you know, get the...
It's a good person to learn from.
Yes, exactly.
And so, and you can, I mean, feel free to name names if you want, of where you worked. I mean,
yeah.
You
oh, yeah,
don't
no,
have to if you don't want to.
No, it was at Two James Spirits.
Two James, yeah. Okay. Great. And so how long were you there at Two James?
I was about four years and change, about.
Okay. And then how did you find your... You said earlier that you were looking for a different opportunity,
yep.
But how did you find here?
There was a job posting.
Oh, okay.
nothing too exciting.
Right.
There was a job posting on one of the distilling websites. So there's a couple organizations that... you know, represent distillers and people who own distilleries, and kind of, you know, just job, you know, job, sure, yeah. Job meshing, message job, boards.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Got it. And had you been to New Orleans before?
Yeah, I'd visited a couple times for Tales of the Cocktail and just, I think for fun one time. So, and right. It always had been in hot weather. So I kind of knew what I was getting into. It was just,
that's a good thing. We were talking about that right here before we went on the air about how it's hot and we're all waiting for the weather to turn and all that, which is what everybody does here. And so if you came down, there's always people, I always meet people this time of year that have moved down, say to work in the hospitality industry or service industry, something like that. And if you move down this time of year and you can make it through this time of year, you can probably stick.
Yeah, I'm working in a distillery. It's just hot in general. Usually it's in a building that isn't temperature controlled. There's a boiler, you know, that's running most of the day. You're around equipment that's heated, you know, heated with the boiler. So there's a lot of radiant heat. You're just sweating most of the day. Just get used to it.
You know? That's a good attitude because, you know, I guess there's no reprieve, though, when you walk outside.
Yeah, we do have air conditioning. There's no reprieve, but we do have air conditioning in the building and, you know, like in our little, you know, research lab and in the office, and I can hide now. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah,
where I can hide.
That when we were talking about doing the interview here, and you were giving us a tour of the floor of the production facility, and I'm thinking we need to go somewhere where there's going to be some air conditioning to do the interview. I'm not cut out for that.
I've really been able to pick up on that look when people have reached their limit, where I'm just like, it's like you can't handle this anymore. It's like try being here 8 hours.
It was better. You brought me into the tasting room, which was air conditioned, and then we did some tasting. That helped bring me around, and now we're sitting in the air-conditioned office, which is great. Well, cool. So, you basically get on board right when things opened? I mean, were you here from that
pretty much
process going?
Okay. Pretty much. I've been here, you know, from the beginning. Like I said, some of the equipment and some of the stuff was already purchased and kind of on site, and I had to kind of connect the dots and connect everything together, literally. I came on board a little before we actually officially opened.
Okay.
In the middle of winter, which
got it.
Didn't really feel like winter to me.
Right. Yeah.
And I didn't miss the snow. So.
Right, and we had a pretty warm winter this time around. Well, let's do this, Erica. Let's take a little break here on the show. We're going to come back and we'll talk a little bit more about what y'all do here at 7-3 Distilling, talk a little bit about the products that you make and some of the stuff that we just tasted in the tasting room. I absconded with one of the glasses that you brought to sip on in here, so we'll do that.
And, sorry, we'll make sure we get it before you leave.
Fair enough. We'll leave it behind. I brought my wife with me to keep me honest. So cool. And you guys, we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. We're chatting with Eric Morningstar, head distiller here at 7-3 Distilling right here in New Orleans. Come on back.
The French Market is a place where history is made fresh daily. From the historic Upper Pentalba building on Jackson Square to the ever-evolving Farmers Market, our six-block district celebrates New Orleans food, music, and culture through events, festivals, walking tours, health and fitness classes, and also children's workshops at the New Orleans Jazz Park. Visit our calendar of events at www.frenchmarket.org. The French Market, making history fun since 1791.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranac's, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Thanks for tuning in today. I really appreciate it. We are here, as you know, at 7-3 Distilling, right here in New Orleans downtown, and are chatting with Eric Morningstar, who's the head distiller here. And again, Eric, thanks for being here.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks for having me here is probably what you are here.
Yes, I'm here all the time. Here. So.
Right, right. I am the one who's not. So thank you for having me here, Eric.
No problem at all.
So it's a cool place that you guys have here, and we, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you gave us a tour of the facility, which I appreciate. It was very interesting and informative. But in addition to the production area, which, as you mentioned, you guys are looking to ramp up production, so you've got the space to do that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a very nice facility. But you also have a really cool tasting room, which we paid a little visit to.
Yeah, no, the tasting room is pretty special. It's quite large, and there's a lot of nice little details. We're still kind of, you know, fixing it up, adding things as we go. But you know, anybody interested should definitely come in and check it out. We're adding more spirits as we go, so the tastings are getting more and more interesting. We're also able to make cocktails. So
yeah, that's kind of a cool thing I wanted to mention, is that you guys are able. So you have a cocktail menu, so it's not just tasting, you know, little tasting pours of the products that you make, but actually cocktails. How long ago did the tasting room open?
The tasting room opened the same time we opened.
Oh, it did.
I mean, it's been a slow start. You know, we're not open, you know, bar hours or anything. We're still kind of, you know, being open for a couple hours a day. You know, so we're doing tours, which we can talk about a little later. So we're open for sort of a window in the afternoon, kind of after work. We're doing some happy hour stuff, but you know, we're. As the business ramps up, that's starting to ramp up. Everything's moving at once. So
right. So a rising tide kind of thing, right? There you go. And we'll make sure here at the end of the interview that we talk about where people can, you know, find you online and on the street, so you can check out when you're actually open and people will know. But it's cool because it's a really nice facility. And, you know, a lot of places, obviously, when you go to certain production places that make anything really beer, spirits, wine, I guess wine's probably more of an exception, is that, you know, not all the time do you have a tasting room. And so it's really nice to be able to come and have a comfortable tasting room and have that kind of experience. Is the kind of the idea, Eric, too, that people will say, come and do a tour, tour ends in the tasting room, sit down, do a tasting?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Is that the
definitely
idea?
Yeah. I mean, it's, we're building it out. So, you know, the tour is an integral part of the experience when you come here. So, you know, there's a production facility where you can learn about, you know, how we make things and just generally how distilling works. You know, it's a bit of mystery to a lot of people, I find out, and it's something I'm just kind of steeped in every day. So you get to learn that process, but, you know, there's also the connection to the neighborhood and, you know, historic Old Treme and Storyville, which we're not too far away from. So we're adding that as part of the tour, and obviously cocktails are part of that. I mean, it's a big part of the city and its history. So
yeah, absolutely, without a doubt. And actually, let's mention that, because for people, especially people who are listening to the show on the podcast that are not from New Orleans or not in New Orleans, tell people about, we didn't touch on this, the name 7-3 Distilling.
Oh yeah, definitely.
That ties very much into the neighborhood consideration.
Yeah, so that is kind of our concept, is the 7-3 Distilling, that represents the 73 official neighborhoods of New Orleans, which, you know, there's officially, that's from the city, so it's the official number, but, you know, people dispute that, and, you know, where people actually live and what they consider what neighborhood.
We don't have to go, that's a whole other show.
Yeah, that is. You can look it up online. If you look it up online, just do a Google search of, you know, the official 73 neighborhoods, you'll get the whole rundown. So we're naming our products in honor of those 73 neighborhoods. You know, we're cherry picking some of the really cool names. Saint Rock, it's not Saint Roche, even though it's R-O-C-H. Gentilly Gin. We'll be working on our bourbons, which will be coming out later. Bywater Bourbon and Irish Channel Whiskey, which will be coming out shortly. Marini Moonshine. So you kind of get the...
There you go.
Yeah.
First letter. I'm pretty quick on the...
Yeah, we're a big fan of alliteration.
Alliteration, right, exactly. Well, let's talk about this then, Eric. So, we'll get to the labels. And you can, and friends, you can certainly check out our Facebook page and stuff like that, because we'll have some, in Instagram, we'll have some shots. You can see labels are really cool. The way it represents makes you feel very New Orleans-y with the names as well as how the labels are designed. But let's go back to the production a little bit about what you're making. Actually, let me ask you this question, too, to kind of springboard this. When they brought you in, was it sort of like, here's the keys to the car? Was there sort of already a vision for flavor profile and some of these things? Or was that kind of a very collaborative process? How did that go?
Yes and no. It was kind of broad strokes. It was kind of like, here's the keys to the car. You know, the engine isn't quite running yet, and you have to figure out how to hook it up and make everything go. So, you know, come up with the recipes, move forward. I mean, there's some general ideas about the vodka and the Marini Moonshine, or, well, not specifically the Marini Moonshine, but making a rice whiskey, because we're in Louisiana and there's lots of rice. But it's been primarily up to me, and then obviously there's an approval process, and we've invited, you know, people from the community and friends and family to kind of come in and take a test drive with some of the, you know, some of the spirits, especially the gin, because it's a little more complex. And we went through about 12 different, maybe a little more than that, iterations of different flavor profiles, and you know, kind of, we had our favorites, and, you know, it kind of shook out how we thought it would, but it was just confirmation. It was fun.
Sure.
So
yeah, that's always the fun part, right? Yeah. Is going through. Now, when you're making what you're making, Eric, so right now currently available, so you have the St. Rock vodka.
Yep.
And then you have what's the cucumber vodka?
It's also St. Rock. St. Rock cucumber vodka. Okay. So.
And then the Gentilly Gin.
Gentilly Gin, that's correct.
Right. And that's what's available on the market currently.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about the mash bill that you use for, we can stick to those three.
Yeah. Yeah. So those spirits that are, you know, we consider white or clear spirits, they're not aged. We're using a blend of corn and cane. So it's a very small amount of cane, but kind of helps balance it out and kind of soften the corn.
Oh, yep. There you go.
Yeah. Just soften that sort of hardness of the corn that can kind of tend to come through. So, and then with the St. Rock, we have a very sort of proprietary, filtration system that we use, where it's actually pretty visually interesting, and if you come in on a tour, you can see it. But we use copper, limestone, carbon, and actually oxygen to kind of help, you know, smooth out the spirit and really make it unique. So
I have a picture. I'll put that on the website too, perfect, so people can see that. But perfect, come in and take the tour. We're not trying to discourage you from that. So Louisiana sugarcane, I'm assuming
that you. That one, no, it's not. It's not specifically local on that one.
So. Okay, gotcha. So and it's a neat still that you have. So it's a hybrid still between a pot and column still.
Yeah, it is. It's an unusual unit, but it's been really fun to use. I'm really happy with the results. It gives me a lot of control, and it's actually extremely quick. I'm used to a unit that's about the same size, but because ours is a split pot, which if you come in, you can kind of see it. There's actually two pots that are connected to a single column, which makes sense if you're looking at it and if you actually know what I'm talking about.
But I got a picture of that.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. But it's because it's split in two, it heats up a lot quicker, and it's also just hot down here, so it doesn't, you know, the heat hangs around.
Right. You got that working.
But it's been really fun to have it, you know, work as well, you know, as it does, you know, because it is sort of an experimental unit.
So you get sort of the best of both worlds, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in a sense, if you want to look at it that way.
Exactly.
And tell people, we got about a minute before we got to take another break here, Eric, but tell people just really briefly, if they don't know, what's a basic fundamental difference between a pot still and a column still?
So a pot still is generally more traditional. When you think of, you know, moonshiners out in the on the woods somewhere, usually they're using a pot still. So it's a very simple vessel. It's basically a big pot with the, you know, that's sealed with a tube or a neck or a, you know, that runs through a condenser, and you can get very flavorful kind of low proof spirits. And with a column still, which is what is, you know, used to mass produce spirits in very, very large facilities that are, you know, multi stories tall. They're very, very efficient and produce a very clean spirit. So we can kind of do both.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Which is, you know, which is good for us, because we have kind of big plans for a broad spirit line.
Yeah, and that's what's really important about this, right? Really does matter what type of spirit we're talking about, the benefits of either.
Yeah,
got it. Well, let's do this, Eric. We're going to take another little break here, and then we're going to come back and chat a little bit more about what they all make here at 7-3 Distilling, and we'll make sure to tell you how you can come check them out. Friends, come on back.
Hey ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from: Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in the Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Goodbye, Joe. I got to go. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Thanks for tuning in today. As always, I really appreciate it. Or thank you for downloading, streaming, and subscribing to the podcast, if that's what you do. I also appreciate that. As you know, we're here at 7-3 Distilling here in New Orleans, a newish, I'll say, distillery here in town. And we're chatting with Eric Morningstar, who is the head distiller here. And Eric, we were talking a little bit just here during the break. So, you know, we talked on the three products available: the vodka, the cucumber vodka, and the Gentilly gin. And what you and I were talking about during the break and beforehand in the tasting room, let's talk a little bit about your style of gin. So maybe I think a lot of people out there are familiar. If you're a gin drinker, maybe, you know, you like the so-called London dry style, very juniper forward. This is very different than that.
Yeah, so there's a couple different camps, you know, similar to wine, where you have like New World wines and Old World wines, kind of a similar breakdown, where this is kind of considered a new Western gin, or I would consider it that, where there's definitely juniper in there. It's a majority of the botanical bill, but there's a lot of extra botanicals, or when I say extra, but there's a lot more complexity in 17 different botanicals as opposed to five or six with a traditional London dry.
And a very heavy juniper part
and
of that.
Yeah, most of that is juniper. So this is a little bit easier. I think it fits its name. You know, it's Gentilly gin. It sort of has a nice, very easy drinking quality. You know, really mixes well, and we also tried to use some local locally, you know, folk medicinal and, you know, Creole Cajun folk medicine in there. So we're, you know, using some persimmon and elderflower, so kind of adds a little, you know, little healing properties there.
I like that. Always good. Oh, definitely good that way. And we talked about this just because when you and I met a while back at Mar and we were tasting, I really enjoyed the gin, and the coriander note was pretty apparent to me. I don't want to give away your botanical.
Oh yeah, no. I mean coriander. I mean juniper and coriander. I mean it's all about the ratios. But the juniper and coriander are the two, you know, your two primary botanicals that are usually used in a gin. Mm-hmm. I mean it's not set in stone, but it doesn't have to have juniper in it, and coriander kind of goes hand in hand usually traditionally.
Right. It's very nice. It's a nice easy drinker. It's one of those ones too where I think it's very, you know, very pleasant on its own.
Yeah.
So a nice easy sipper on the rocks. But because of, I think, some of the broader, more complex notes like you're talking about in the flavor profile, also very nice in cocktails.
Yeah, no, I think it does play well. You know, simple cocktails, obviously gin and tonic and a Collins, you know, the lemon really kind of brings out a lot of the sort of, you know, peppery notes that are in there. And mm-hmm. it's a really kind of interesting thing that happens. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, right now I'm sipping on a kind of I don't want to say a prototype because that's not really, but something that will become something.
Exactly. It's sort of a prototype.
And why don't we tell people about that? Because that's exciting. Sure. We talked about clear spirits being out now. We're going to turn the corner and go a little brown.
Yeah, exactly. So this is going to be our first release of an aged product. And since, you know, obviously we said we're only about 7 months old, and it's going to take a minimum of 2 years, probably more, to have our complete in-house grain to bottle. We're importing an Irish whiskey, and we found some really, really amazing 10-year-old corn whiskey, American, that we're blending together and then finish aging in a cognac cask. So they're 25-year-old cognac casks that we've imported from France that are really amazing. And, you know, we've finally got our spirit in there, and you're just smelling it and tasting it, you know, even though it's been in there that long, really, really, really is getting me excited.
Yeah, it was great. It was fun to smell that because we got to smell inside the barrel. And so what I'm sipping on right now then is kind of, it's the blend.
It's the blend. It's the blend. And I was, you know, I ran to the store and bought a little cognac and just put a couple drops in there just to kind of get a feel for what it's going to do. It's not going to be the full you know, the full experience. It's going to be a lot more complex, and we're going to use some traditional brandy techniques in proofing it down and getting it closer to bottle drinkable strength rather than barrel strength.
Right. And so that what we smelled right now in the barrel, that was, so you're at barrel proof right now with it and that sort of thing. And so I'm guessing too that the blend is still to be determined to a certain degree, right? When you kind of see what the finish is, or do you already know what it's going to be?
No, I mean it's already blended. The two whiskeys have you know,
they already are.
Okay. Oh, they are. Yeah, no, they've been put together. That's done in a separate stainless steel tank. They're allowed to kind of hang out together and make sure they're fully integrated, and then we move that into the cognac casks.
The aging casks. Okay, yep. So they're done together. Okay, got it. And so that's pretty exciting, and so that's something to watch out for. We were talking about this during the break. Not going to hold you to a date when that's going to be out. Can't rush these things.
You can't, unfortunately. It's gonna take some time. I want to have some really amazing Christmas gifts, which I think I've got a few in my pocket. But the whiskey is always a crowd pleaser, and you know we'll see what we can do. But when it comes out, we'll be shouting it from the rooftop. So
got it. Awesome. That'll be cool. Something to look forward to, and we'll make sure we talk about it. And tell people if whatever you want, feel free. I know, you know, certain things are always works in progress. But what else to look for from you guys in the next, you know.
Yeah, like I said earlier, so the Marini Moonshine will probably be the next thing that's out because we're working on that'll be a rice-based spirit, so it'll be a rice whiskey of sorts, and that will also age, but the Moonshine will come out first because it doesn't need to.
What kind of rice, actually, Eric, by the way?
So it's an aromatic rice. I think it actually has a number. So, okay. So the farmer, it was developed at LSU, but the farmer, it's Beth James at James Farms, and they're in Villa Platte, and they're actually growing and milling the rice for us. If you do a Google search, I don't think we're not linked up on our website yet, but it's a really, really cool story, and they're doing, I think they're one of the first rice farms that are actually milling their own rice.
Oh, really? Interesting.
So it's, yeah, and it's, yeah, it's local. We're trying to keep that close.
So that'll be coming out sort of next.
It'll be coming out while the Irish Channel will be coming out, and then after that we'll have the Marini Moonshine. But that like I said, doesn't need to age, so it'll be next year sometime.
Right, got it.
Which we're rapidly approaching the end of the year.
So. Yeah, it does come quick now, doesn't it? Exactly. Right, so that's pretty exciting to come out. And so, and again, you guys are keeping with the same label concept, same design, right?
It'll be very similar. You know, we have our bottles, custom bottles that we had designed and made for us. So we'll keep with that sort of similar, the neighborhood theme, the 73 neighborhoods of New Orleans.
Yeah, and also, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, and then I was going to say, this will be aging. We're not going to do a white version of this. Is going to be our Bywater bourbon, which, you know, we're working with a farm in Donaldsonville, Schneck Schneider and Sons, and they're growing our corn for us, which should be very exciting. But that's going to take time. There's no shortcuts with bourbon. So
right, absolutely. And you got to come into the growing season for the corn, obviously, and everything else. So absolutely. And I was joking with you because obviously you have 68 or so neighborhoods left to tap. So the list is long. Yeah. Do me a favor, Eric. We got about 2 minutes left. Let's tell people where can people find you online.
So we're our website is 73distilling.com. It's all spelled out, SEVENTHRE. Yeah, it's kind of a long one, but it's we're there. Most of the information online is there online. If you're interested in coming in for a tour or just coming in for a drink in the tasting room, we're open every day except Sunday and Monday. We just have walk-ins, so if you want to come in for a tour, just pop in and around 3 o'clock, 3:30, we'll get started, and you can have a drink in the meantime, try one of our cocktails or do a little tasting. So
that's cool. And then I noticed the cocktails are actually really like reasonably priced, six bucks, I think, for most things.
There's some reasonable stuff there. When we get into whiskey, it might change things a little bit. But
fair enough. And go ahead.
Uh-huh. But yeah, with our cocktails, we're keeping them pretty simple to showcase the spirits, and we want people to try them. So
great. And the address here, street address?
It's 301 North Claiborne.
Great. So right here near the freeway, and so corner of Claiborne and Bienville.
Yeah, it's right by the impound lot. If you've ever had the joy of having your car booted,
and towed, that happened. Yeah. I've been there. I don't need to talk about that. But Eric, thanks so much for being here today. Back up. Thank you so much for having me here today.
Right.
And a pleasure to see you again. And thanks for the tour and the tasting.
Yeah, no problem at all. No problem at all.
Cool. Thanks, Eric. We'll do it again soon. Keep us posted on the things that come out and so on.
Oh, definitely will.
Awesome. Friends, thanks for tuning into this part of the show. We're going to be back with just a little bit more here on the Noel Drink Show. And again, thanks to Eric for hosting us here today at 73 Distilling, 301 North Claiborne. Check them out, 73, all spelled out, 73distilling.com online. And that's the best way to check out when the tasting rooms open and all that stuff. It's a great visit, nice facility, friends. We're going to take a little break here on the show and be back with more. Come on back.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy.
Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
This is Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for tuning in today. Brian Diaz here at WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yep, and here we are. It's a Tuesday here airing, if you're listening on Thursday a couple days ago, or if you're listening to the podcast, whenever. We are here on Tulane Avenue at Trejo, and we are talking about an important issue. I'm pleased to be joined by Tyler Chauvin, who runs the beverage program here at Trejo.
Hello, hello.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing very well.
Very
excited
good.
For Sunday.
Excited for Sunday. We're going to talk about that. You're still basking in the glow of your big win at Love in the Garden at NOMA on Friday.
I absolutely am.
Congratulations
yeah, thank
on
you
that.
Very much.
Absolutely. And I'm also here with Cole Newton, who is the proprietor of 12 Mile Limit, right around the corner. Easy commute, man.
Oh, yeah. I walked over here today. I'll be walking back. We're doing an event for Planned Parenthood at the bar tonight.
Oh,
so
cool.
I'll be back and forth a little bit, but happy to be in the company of our lovely neighbors here at Trejo.
That's great. Now, was that commute walking over here, Cole, enough to constitute exercise, or is it too close to constitute
exercise? It is the most exercise that I've gotten today, but I still don't think it should count.
Okay, fair enough. Now, you were, just since we were talking about, you were a judge at the Love in the Garden event on
I was.
Friday.
I got a little bit of heat because one of my bartenders was competing. I made no claims of being impartial.
And I did actually ask you that, if you were going to recuse yourself before you got to that table, and I got a non-answer, so.
Oh, no, it would have been very hard to sway things in Megan's direction if I recused myself, so.
Right on.
Very well nice. Done, Megan.
Yeah, well done.
Megan did win best in category.
She sure so did.
She did, she did.
She did. Strong showing.
Everybody was a winner. There you go. Well, you guys, it's a really important event that you're putting on Sunday, and it's here at Trejo, and we'll get into the specifics in a little bit, but it's to benefit victims, specifically in the service industry in Houston, victims of Hurricane Harvey. Tyler.
Yes. So I guess just to give a little background on how I started with this, it was a Saturday morning. The waters were starting to come up in Houston. I'm sure it was bringing on a lot of PTSD for a lot of us, like native New Orleanians or even those who had to live through Katrina. So I remember I was here at Trejo just cleaning the floors and the bathrooms and freaking out. And so I went and sat outside for a second and calmed down. And I was like, there's got to be a better way to exercise this rather than just sitting in your room and like just looking at pictures from Katrina and crying and feeling really helpless. And so I reached out to Cole. I reached out to Abigail and Chris Hanna and Lucy Weed and all of these really great people in our industry that are always working really hard to try and give back. And so I just sent out a big, massive text and was like, we need to do something. And I mean, the response was almost immediate from everyone else. So that was like the first sign that I thought this was going to be a really great event. And it also just showed that, like, I think everyone else may have been kind of silently feeling the same way, and I'm glad that we could create this outlet for everyone to try and help.
Absolutely, and it's a great thing that you're doing, and it's important. One of the things that we were talking about, and I'll flip this to you, Cole, that during or before we went on the air here, Houston was really good to this city here in New Orleans after Katrina and was integral in supporting the city and the efforts to recover, providing resources, a place for people to live, actually, all of this kind of stuff. And I think we have an obligation here to help our neighbor to the west.
Yeah, Houston and New Orleans are very, very connected culturally, are very connected geographically. We're both prone to these types of incidents. We both flood all the time. So Houston really did, I think, more than any other city. And there were tons of cities. Atlanta, I mean, people in Salt Lake City were very receptive to people, the New Orleans diaspora, people displaced during Katrina, but nobody as much as Houston. So I think it's important for the not to forget as more and more tragedies mount up in the meantime between Harvey and when this fundraiser was scheduled. It's important for us not to lose sight of their specific need.
That's a great point. Let's talk about that too, because I think, and we were talking about this before we went on the air. A lot of people might think, wow, you know, Harvey was a while ago, and I'm not going to make a philosophical comment on our collective memory and attention span here in this contemporary society of ours. But, you know, it was a while ago. We've now had two hurricanes. We've also had two major earthquakes in Mexico. You know, people, we have all kinds of connections to these places in the city. It's important to remember that, and we know this here in New Orleans, but maybe those of you out there elsewhere do not, it's a long recovery process. And after the stuff where the water, you know, recedes and people have food and diapers and, you know, purified drinking water, rebuilding your life is a tough part of this.
Yeah. I mean, I can agree with that one. And I was actually even having a conversation with a friend of mine the other night that, you know, I think that the specific need of Houston is so high because flooding is an all-encompassing kind of loss. It's wind damage, you may have to repair part of your roof, or you would potentially get water damage. But I mean, when there's massive flooding like what happened in Houston, it's everything is gone. You know, you're going to have to replace everything down to the sheetrock in your house. Mm-hmm. And so I think that process takes a lot longer to go through. And so that, like you were saying, the need is a lot longer. The reason why we're targeting service industry in the first place is because they're oftentimes very like either underinsured or underrepresented, whether that be with renter or homeowners insurance is a bit different, but it's more of a necessity. Whereas like renter's insurance is kind of like a selective thing, but
right.
Regardless, sorry, I digress. So you're looking at the needs of like renting insurance. You're looking at perhaps health insurance is something that, you know, oftentimes service industry are underinsured in that respect. There's not really the offer of PTO, paid time off, like there is in other sorts of jobs. So you're not only losing income during the actual storm, but you're also losing income in the aftermath when your bar or restaurant may be, it may need an entire redo.
Right. And that's an important point too, because I think we talk about the effects that a natural disaster like this can have. You can have a damaged place of work, right? Which, I mean, so then you're, like you're saying, Tyler, you're not making money because you're not getting tips, you're not getting paid, you're not, you know, getting your salary or your wages, excuse me. But then also if you're in a particular location, perhaps where because of the damage or even just the perception of tourism, your business level is going to fall off. And so these people are going to suffer. And at least in some establishments, I would say, Cole, and to get your thoughts on this, are going to suffer for a longer period of time than other businesses.
Yeah, I definitely think that for a lot of the reasons that Tyler mentioned, people in the service industry are uniquely susceptible to the disruption caused by these types of events. So you have, I mean, you can't work from home as a bartender. Right. I mean, you can make drinks, but no one's going to give you any money for it.
That's a further net loss, actually.
Yeah, true. But even for those bartenders who are fortunate enough to have to work for a company that is capable of offering paid leave and things of that nature, such a disproportionate amount of the income in the service industry, even if you work in a place where you're getting a decent hourly, comes from tips, that if you're getting your paid leave, you're still only getting your hourly compensation. I've never been in a situation where I had to file, but I would be very surprised if you were able to get compensated for the tip portion of your income too. So, but yeah, if you're displaced for an extended period of time, the opportunity cost of having to help out your family and loved ones who may also be in a particular area of need, the service industry, and if you're dealing with it on two fronts, if you can't work, you can't get the resources needed to rebuild, and if you're spending all of the resources you have, or all the time you have and energy that you have emotionally and physically rebuilding, then you may not be able to work as much as you would normally, and it can become a very vicious cycle. But yeah, service industry people, for a number of reasons, are particularly vulnerable to this type of disruption.
And these are the great points, both of you. I think also what we want people to consider as well is that in the service industry, hospitality industry, and this town is certainly a quintessential example of that, but in Houston as well, it's one of the first industries that can actually help the overall area with economic recovery, because that is bringing in tourist dollars or even people locally that are spending money and putting it back directly into the economy, both the tax base as well as paying people.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, but you have to think about it this way. If the bars, if, you know, bars and restaurants are being damaged by this, not only does it, it makes it more of a fighting game for the people who are still in Houston and now looking for work, but it also drives down the tourism economy, because if the perception is there that the entire city has been wrecked, people are going to be far less willing to go travel to Houston for vacation.
Exactly.
And so, yeah. And I mean, I think we New Orleans experienced that very much so in the aftermath of Katrina. It was really rough. And so it was one of those things where it took a very long time to get back into service industry. And so, yeah, I just, that was my biggest focus for that, was just trying to figure out a way to funnel some sort of economic support into the service industry community, just to kind of help during this, like, this interim where everything's being rebuilt.
So great. You guys, let's do this real quick. I'm going to take a little break here, and we're going to come back, and we're going to chat more with Tyler and Cole, and we'll get into some of the specifics about the event on Sunday and let you know how you can help our neighbors in the service industry over there in Houston. Come on back. Back to New Orleans, I've got my suitcase in my hand.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bageau heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event, or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers. Get in the groove and let the good
times roll. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Thanks for tuning in today. Here we are at Trejo. As you know, we are chatting with Tyler Chauvin and Cole Newton, and we're talking about their efforts here on Sunday upcoming to put on a fundraiser to benefit members of the service industry. And we wanted to be clear about this, y'all, that we keep saying Houston, but we're talking about the greater area of those in Texas affected by Hurricane Harvey, so it's not limited to those folks in Houston city limits.
Right, right. There will also be, there's a Harvey Fund through the USBG that will, and that's, by the way, the United States Bartenders Guild, for those of y'all not in the service industry. And they're all, I'll let Cole talk a little bit more about that since he sits on the board for our New Orleans chapter. But yes, it will be going also dispersed to those in the greatest need, also including like the coastal areas of Texas.
And this is really important too. This is something that we were more or less talking about before we went to the break, or we're talking about that. And we know this, if you're listening in New Orleans, that the hospitality industry and tourism, which is mostly in both these places, especially in some of those coastal environments and things like that in Texas, are a key industry in driving the recovery of the area. It was here after Katrina. I mean, it was what, you know, people come here for food and entertainment and all that stuff, and that industry helped drive much of the recovery of the New Orleans area, and that part of the world that will be no exception, Houston included, but especially the coastal areas. Cole, let's talk, because these things, people ask this too, because we're all concerned when we give money to things, to causes, and either through, you know, our own effort of showing up and spending money and whatever we do, but people are always concerned about where those funds go and appropriately how they're used. And you guys have a plan for that?
We do have a plan for that. We sat down early on and we talked about what organizations we should be giving money to specifically so we could help people in the service industry. Fortunately, the USBG, the US Bartenders Guild, has a nonprofit arm that is, it's sort of separate from the Guild itself. It's related to, but separate from the Guild itself, the nonprofit arm. And they have a bartender emergency assistance program. And within that bartender emergency assistance program, there is specifically a Harvey earmark. So we can direct money through the USBG to their charitable arm, and it will go directly. Bartenders, and you do not have to be a USBG member to apply. I don't even think you necessarily need to be a bartender to apply. I should confirm that before, but I think service industry members can apply for these funds. It's a couple thousand dollars that you can get as a one-time grant that doesn't need to be repaid, and that it can go towards your basically your survival needs, your rebuilding, whatever lost income would have gone to. You can. I don't think those funds are restricted.
So day to day, food, just rent, living. Anything like that. Living. Yeah. Okay. That's important.
Yeah, definitely. And the other portion of our funds, I think we agreed to a 50-50 split, is going to, many of you listeners probably are aware of Sam Perez. Sam works at the Catahoula Hotel, runs their beverage program. She worked for several years for a nonprofit called the St. Bernard Project, which was founded specifically to help St. Bernard Parish, which, if you don't know, is just east of the city of New Orleans and was also hit very, very hard by flooding during Katrina. And they have since moved to a more national focus. And a lot of what they do is organizing volunteers and resources to help with gutting. And a lot of what is going on in Houston, and also in some of the coastal towns still, will be gutting homes. Like I said, tearing it down to the stud, taking out the drywall, and then building it back out from there. That's a huge expense. And St. Bernard Project is able to help people who are otherwise wouldn't be able to afford that expense and might have to sell a very, very devalued home is the only recourse to get anything back from it. So they prevent the need for people to do that. And Houston specifically, because the Harvey affected areas of Texas and I guess parts of Louisiana are at that stage now. The waters are down, the damage has been assessed, and people are sort of ready to get down into the nitty-gritty. And the St. Bernard Project should be very helpful
there. They're a very good organization for that. They were also integral in helping and still part of helping out the folks who were victimized by the flooding in the Baton Rouge area last year here in southeast Louisiana. So it's a tremendous organization. It's one, and we're talking about this here, it's one of those organizations. There's a chain or a process here that recovery takes in the short and medium term, and we're now in the medium term in Harvey affected areas. We're going to use that. I like that. Harvey affected areas. So that's really, really important. Let's talk about this because we're going to have one more segment after this. So we're going to talk. I don't want to say we're being doom and gloom. This is all necessary information here, but we're talking about some of the specifics and some of the mechanics. And then what we'll do in the segment after this one is that we'll talk about all the fun that we're going to have on Sunday and raising money.
Yeah, there will be fun.
There will be fun, and we'll get there. But we're going to make you wait for the fun just for a few minutes here. Let's talk a little bit because you guys are calling us a lot of great support coming from members of the service industry here in New Orleans, but then also we were talking about a lot of product lines, so a lot of producers are also being wonderful and very generous with their goods.
Yes. Yeah. That was another thing that was very surprising to me. I guess it shouldn't have been, but it's just been really great to see the generosity of all of the brands that have been stepping forward, as well as like the restaurants and the music entertainers, as well as even like the printing needs that we've had for shirts and cups and everything. Everything seemed pretty, it was very easy, and it seemed like it was just a no-brainer from all of these companies, which felt really great because it is always kind of uncomfortable to have to ask for, you know, things for free. But I mean, I can go over the brands if
you
want. Yeah,
please do, absolutely.
So just a little definition about the bartender's handshake as well, because that's another industry-specific term. And so it's kind of the industry's version of, instead of walking in and shaking someone's hand when you say when your fellow bartender walks into your bar, you'll instead like pass them a shot as like a way to say hello. So that's what a bartender's handshake is, just to provide a little bit of clarity on that. And so I know Fernet Branca is really oftentimes like tied in with that, but it doesn't have to be limited to that. It can be really any shot. So they have certainly provided some spirits for the event as well. Also, we have Sazerac on board, Caneland Rum out of Baton Rouge, and they are a new brand, and their spiced rum is killer. All of these brands are killer.
They're a really good distillery. We don't have to talk. Well, yeah,
right. We're not going to sell one over the other, because they're all great. But that's just the spirit I'm working with. Anyway, so then we also have the Ghost Tequila. We have Bulldog Gin. Let's see. We also have Cathead Vodka. Angel's Envy Bourbon, and we also have, I think I might be missing one of them, right?
I think you hit them all.
Did I hit them all? I may have.
Okay, you've got...
if you remember what it is, we'll come back to talk about the format.
Well, because I was going to say which bartenders are going to be working...
Yeah,
we'll talk about the format of the event in a couple minutes after the break. No, what about the music? Who do you got?
So we have two DJs and a band. We have DJ Carmine P. Filthy. We'll be playing from 12:30 to 2:30. From 3 to 5, we'll have the St. Claude Serenaders. And then from 5:30 to 7:30, we'll have DJ Yes Kate Yes, who will be out here. It's all very fun, very different styles of music, but that'll be out there, and we're trying, weather permitting, as we all know, New Orleans, and it's sudden inclement weather.
Forecast is looking good so far for Sunday. It's looking really great.
We're
going to have a cold front.
Yeah, it's going to be a high of 82.
Yes.
So, oh my God, that's not perfect.
Definitely not come out. Yeah. So we're going to try and do this out in our like big, beautiful courtyard space that we have.
Well, and what about, and we'll get to the specific in a second.
Sorry.
Tyler. No, don't be sorry. What about the restaurants?
So for restaurants, we have, I think we have 6 different restaurants involved. We're going to have Klessy's Catering over on Bank Street is going to be doing jambalaya. Fry Smoked Meats is going to be doing their mac and cheese. Oh. Yeah. Tana, which is the restaurant located in Trejo, will be doing red beans and rice with cornbread. We do have some food coming from Pigeon Caterers. They are keeping that a surprise, so we're perfectly fine with that. Avery's on Tulane will be doing a pumpkin soup. We will have Cole from 12 Mile, and his kitchen's going to be offering...
Just pulled pork and slider buns.
Yeah.
Sliders.
Awesome.
And then Pauline Patterson, who is one of the 2 proprietors here at Trejo, will be doing her kind of neighborhood infamous shepherd's pie.
Oh, okay.
So she is Irish, so it's really well-renowned.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Let's do this, you two. Let's take our little break here that we were just talking about, and we're going to come back and talk about how you can come to the event, how you can support the cause, and how you can actually come have fun on what is shaping up to be a beautiful Sunday. We're going to knock on wood on that one. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the show,
please.
And we're going to be back with Tyler and Cole talking about their Hurricane Harvey benefit coming up here at Trejo on Tulane Avenue this Sunday. Come on back.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
The French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bageau heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Everybody, welcome back to the Nola Drinks Show. Brian Gius here, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land wherever you are. Yes, we are here at Trejo chatting with Tyler and Cole about this Sunday's Hurricane Harvey benefit taking place here at Trejo, 3835 Tulane Avenue, right? And we were talking about before we went back on there, coming back here on the air, it's going to be a lot of fun, you guys. There's a lot of really fun things going on. I heard things like beer pong, bocce, all kinds, and it's sort of, as you said, Tyler, we'll start here, like a casual drink competition, but not really a competition.
Yeah, I mean, none of us are showing up for prizes. Let's put it that way. It's more of just a collective effort to try and get out as many people as possible. So, yeah, there will be throughout the day from 12:30 to 6:30, just a collective cocktail competition where essentially we just got bartenders from around the city to kind of pair up together, work together, come up with a really fun, simple, easy drinking cocktail to pair with a spirit of choice. So I can run through the timeline of people if you guys want to mark down for who your favorites are going to be.
Sure, go for it.
From 12:30 to 1:30, we have Brooke Flaherty from Aaron Rose, and we have Anna Mangiardi from 21st Amendment. They're going to be working with Angels Envy. We will have, from 1:30 to 2:30, we have Chris Hanna from French 75, and we have Abigail Gulo from Compare Le Pin. They're going to be working with Ghost Tequila. After that, we have Cole and Megan, both from 12 Mile.
That's me.
Yeah. And they have Cathead. They're going to be doing the honeysuckle vodka. After that, we have, I think it's myself and Paul Gustings are coming up after that one. We're working with Caneland Rum. Then after that, we have Lucy Weed and Laura Bellucci. Lucy's from Black Penny, and she also reps St. Germain. And then we also have Laura Bellucci from
Sobu,
and they are going to be working with St. Germain. And then after that, we have Evan Wolf from Company Burger and Denzel Brown from The Troubadour, and they are going to be working with Bulldog Gin.
So everybody's kind of staggered.
Yeah, yeah. We're each going to be working our shifts.
Okay.
So 12:30 to 1:30, 1:30 to 2:30, and so on and so forth. And we're just going to see which one of the Cheap People teams can collect the most tickets for drinks.
And a key part about this, and Cola, if you talk about this, so with the drinks, if people purchase drink tickets, 100% of those proceeds are going to go to the effort.
Yeah, 100% of the proceeds from the drinks that you get as part of the competition,
that Tyler just went through, yep.
All of those proceeds will be going to the relief effort. And the drink tickets, you'll be able to sort of set yourself up for whatever you want to do as you come in. There'll be a table set up, and that's where you'll be able to buy the tickets that you will use to exchange for the competition cocktails. You'll also be able to sign up for some of the other activities that we have. You talked about beer pong. The 610 Stompers are going to help run that. Urban South is donating a keg of their beer, so we'll have some pretty above average beer pong beer, I would say.
Yeah, that's really above average beer pong beer.
A little later in the afternoon, Steve Yamada, also of 12 Mile Limit and Latitude 29, is going to be swinging by, and he's going to help run a bocce tournament. But all of that you can sign up for and get. You donate the money required to participate.
And that 100% of those proceeds also go.
Also, the Trejo has received donations for Broadbent Wine, was that?
Broadbent Wines, yeah.
Broadbent Wine, they're donating some red and white wine. They'll be selling those at happy hour prices throughout the evening. All of those proceeds will be going, as well as from beer. Urban South is donating beer for that, too. And then there'll be a portion of proceeds from other drink sales as well? Is that how it was broken down?
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to do a portion of, so happy, Let me slow down here. Trejo will be running our happy hour specials throughout the entirety of the event. So we typically do $6 classic cocktails. We have 33 of them on the menu. We normally do a happy hour beer for $4. That's going to be the Urban South on draft. And then we will also be offering the wine, the house red and white wine for $5. All of the proceeds from the wine sales during happy hour will be donated. And then a portion of the proceeds from the beer and cocktails will be donated from Trejo as well.
Great. So now, and anybody, I want to make sure that we're clear with this too, because I know a lot of people listen to the show are in the service industry. Anybody can show up to this. This is open to the public. Anybody
Absolutely.
That wants to help support the cause can be here.
Yes, please. The more, the absolute merrier. If we run out of space in the courtyard, we certainly have a large gallery space as well where you can come and cool off and lounge out for a second. So don't be concerned about lack of space in this place. But yes, this is open completely to the public. And like I said, it's going to be a suggested donation of $10 at the door. We are asking for that, A, to help with the proceeds, but also we will have the food donated like we had spoke about in an earlier segment. So we want to, you know, we want to supply as much food as we can for as long as we can.
Right. And so come early and spend often, I think, is the idea, right?
Yes, yes. We can. Cash is obviously... we would prefer to have cash, but we will have a credit card station set up where you can put any of your charges, any of your purchases onto a debit or credit card as well. So please don't feel like you have to bring cash, but we prefer it.
Well, and you guys have pulled together a really a great representation of folks that are coming to participate and make cocktails, a lot of great brands. You mentioned great music, 610 Stompers, all this kind of stuff. How fast did this all come together? Did you put the call out and it came together pretty quick?
Tyler talked about that earlier. It was within a day, I think, of landfall that Tyler just sort of started reaching out to people, and everyone responded very quickly. We had a planning meeting that following week at 12 Mile Limit, and then at that planning meeting, almost all of this was close to finalized. We didn't necessarily know what brands were going to be participating, but we had a solid lineup for the bar contest, the whole format. We figured out which charities we were going to go to. Almost everything happened very, very, very quickly. We decided to give it a little time before actually having the event, just to make sure everyone's scheduled lined up.
Sure.
But the response was immediate. And I think that one of the things, like people want to help. People are always looking for a way to help. So people, I know, like Tyler reached out to a lot of people, but a lot of people responded so quickly because they were waiting for someone to ask. They're like, people want something to do, but they don't know how to direct the energy that they have and the resources that they have. So thank you, Tyler, for giving everyone the opportunity to do what we all wanted to do, which is help.
And that's great. And something very bona fide too, Tyler. We were talking about that as well, where, you know, people are concerned about giving their hard-earned money up and participating in something if they don't think it's going to go the right direction. And this is going to go the right direction. I really thank you for doing this.
Yeah, I mean, that was my biggest concern when organizing all of that was I knew that I wouldn't have a problem having... The people that work in this industry in New Orleans are so incredible. They are like the friendliest, most generous people you will ever encounter. So I knew that wouldn't be an issue. The brands have always been so generous, and even the restaurants, everyone. And so that wasn't my concern. My concern was making sure that whatever funds we raised would actually be going directly to the people that are affected and with need. So Cole was instrumental in making sure that like the money would be allocated, especially like directly where it needed to go. And so now it's just a matter of getting bodies out here.
Getting folks out here.
Yeah, some wallets open.
Well, we got about a minute and a half left, you guys. So let's reiterate, let's circle back on the important stuff. Time, location. And you don't have to come for the whole time. Come by for a couple hours, have a couple drinks, participate in a game, drop a little bit of money, and then go back out and do your Sunday, whatever else you had planned.
Yeah. I'll first lead with the Saints are playing at 8:30 in London this Sunday. So there, we made certain there wasn't a conflict with the Saints game.
That's huge.
So it's from 12 to 7 p.m. We will have ongoing cocktails, brand new cocktails coming out every hour for you to try. They're all going to be $5 a piece. We will have entertainment in the way of DJs and a band all throughout the day. the Sixth and Stompers in Urban South will be there throughout the day. So it's really like Brian was saying, it's not one of these things where you have to show up at noon and you can't leave until 7.
Right.
So we're at 3835 Tulane Avenue. There is ample parking on Tulane Avenue and on Yoloa Street. And we're working right now to secure some additional parking. If we do get that, I will have a sign out on the day great. Of.
Is there an event on Facebook or anything like that at this point?
Yes
there is. It is called Bartender's Handshake. Bartender apostrophe S Handshake. If you just put in those two words on Facebook, I'm pretty sure it's one of the top things that'll pop up.
And we'll share it on the NOLA Drinks Facebook page too. Cole, Tyler, thank you so much for doing this event. Thank you for taking some time out today to tell us all about it.
Yeah, thanks for having us on the
show. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. Friends, be sure to turn up here at Trail 3835 Tulane Avenue this Sunday. Bring some cash, bring some thirst, bring a little bit of hunger, bring your beer pong skills. We'll be looking forward to seeing you out here. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back a little bit more on the show. Come on back.
Oyster rake scraping down Grand Highway.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Back to the show. Thanks for tuning in today. This week, as always, want to thank you whether you're listening here on 990 AM in New Orleans, or if you're catching us in podcast land, wherever you may be. I think we're in more than 34 states. I think we're in more than 20 countries these days here with the show. And I really appreciate you listening in, no matter where you are, bringing you a little taste to exploring the world of drink and food in New Orleans and beyond. As we like to say, there you go. So we hope you like the show and continue to like the show. Tell a friend. You can check us out on NOLA Drinks on Facebook. NOLADrinks.com is our website. NOLA Drinks on Instagram. And speaking of that, I wanted to mention, let me mention something really quick. I promised Tyler this. If you're just listening to the last bit of an interview there, talking about the Bartender's Handshake fundraiser this Sunday coming up, we were talking a lot about the great brands and other support that the event has garnered through donations and these sorts of things. And one of the ones that we didn't get a chance to get in, but Tyler asked me to make sure that we acknowledge, is that Logan Roberts from Ink Mule, which is a printing outfit and graphic design spot. They will be donating cups, t-shirts, and the graphic design for the event. So shout out to Ink Mule and Logan there. And then also the MCNO, which is the Mid-City Neighborhood Organization, provided a grant, which is cool, to cover the cost associated with the printing for the event. So extra little shout out there to Ink Mule and the MCNO helping out with Bartender's Handshake this Sunday at Trejo. Go check that event out, friends. Drop a little cash. Great drinks. It's going to be a lot of fun. Beer pong, man. You know, we talked about that. But I want to talk about Instagram. So that's where I was. So
We went to the Fried Chicken Festival over the weekend. I talked about this last week. Those of us who remember last year's attempt at the, and I'm going to say attempt, Fried Chicken Festival took place at Lafayette Square, and man, it was a disaster. Now, in all fairness, I actually did not go. I'm glad I didn't go, but heard a lot about it through a lot of my friends and others that went. They ran out of food. They got a much, much bigger turnout than one would expect. As somebody said to me recently, go figure, you put on a Fried Chicken Festival somewhere in the South and you think you're not going to have a very big crowd. Anyway, but you know, fair enough. It's a new event, or it was the first year of the event. You know, more power to them. They learned a lot. They did learn a lot. And we went this weekend, and it was a really, it was a very good event. Took place this time. They moved it from Lafayette Square in the CBD to along the river there in the French Quarter at Waldenburg Park, and much more space. I think they had more fryers and other things going on, which they needed, more space for the music. There were some long lines here and there, but there were a lot of cases, and this is what I found very interesting, where there were not particularly long lines. A lot of folks were actually, and again, whatever you want to do, I think there was, you know, I'm sure there were a bunch of tourists out there, but there were a lot of locals out there, and a lot of the really long lines were for a lot of the local places. And I was thinking to myself, well, hey, that's cool, and they do really good food, of course, but I'm kind of thinking, hey, I want to try some of the stuff from out of town, because all the local places I can go to when I want. Now, that's just me. I'm not telling you how to run your life at the Fried Chicken Festival, but that's how we went about doing it. And so we actually tried a couple things. One of the things that we tried was a pretty noted restaurant. It's called Hattie's in Saratoga, New York. They were recently, they actually won against Bobby Flay and that Bobby Flay Food Network throwdown challenge thing where he comes in and they cook the same dish and then they judge. And anyway, so Hattie's actually beat him on his own show, but their fried chicken was just something else. And they had this cranberry coleslaw, which was also something else. And we talked to the owner and chef. His name is Jasper. I forget his last name, for quite a while. Really good guy, very passionate about what he does. Excellent, excellent fried chicken all the way from Saratoga, New York. And then the other one, and this is why I was mentioning Instagram, because it's our current picture on Instagram, or one of the current pictures on Instagram, some folks called Salt House Catering out of Charlotte. And what they did, some really good stuff there too. They're in Charleston, South Carolina. And yeah, it was really, really good. And they did a chicken, kind of a thin fried chicken, and then it had this gravy on it that was made with brown sugar, so it was a nice little bit of sweet that counteracted with the spice. Really cool. But they did and they had some really good collards too, collard greens. But one of my favorite things that they did is they did these boiled peanuts, and the boiled peanuts were actually boiled, I think, you know, shelled, and then they were prepped like baked beans. They were so good. So that's what the picture is, a little bit of chicken, and then we had already eaten most of the peanuts, but you can still get an idea what that tastes like. But a lot of fun at the Fried Chicken Festival. So, hey, there you go. Wanted to mention a little bit of news, and we're not going to go too far down this road. More news from the world of Tales of the Cocktail. Go figure. Go Google the whole thing. Okay, I'm not going to go through the whole story, but in a nutshell, very quickly, the couple that from New Orleans that has run Tales of the Cocktail, Ann and Paul Tunnerman, got themselves in some hot water after Mardi Gras because of a stir, basically a racial slur that Paul made that Ann repeated on social media. And it was bad. It wasn't good. Okay, and you can go Google that part of it. It was all over national service industry news and these sorts of things. So anyway, but then what happened was, and maybe this was a little bit of lip service or symbolic, not so much, you know, having a whole lot of substance behind it. Again, just speculation. Paul resigned from the board and being directly involved with the day-to-day of Tales of the Cocktail. Then just very recently, some 7 months or so removed, Paul was brought back. Okay, just 7 months after all this. Now, maybe, as I said, it was lip service before, but anyway, brought back, and this caused a whole stir. And one of those, they had set up a diversity council to address some of these issues, supposedly or ostensibly. And I believe pretty much everybody on the diversity council resigned. I'm not sure if that was exactly everybody, but a bunch of people from the diversity council resigned out of protests and these things. So then what's ended up happening is now Paul and Ann say that they're going to step back from Tales of the Cocktail. Now, how Tales works, and again, not going to go too far down this, there's a private company called Mojo, okay? And then there's the nonprofit wing, the New Orleans Culinary and Cultural Preservation Society, or NOCCPS. And basically what happens is NOCCPS is the group that puts on Tales, but they contract directly to Mojo. See, it's a nice little neat relationship to put on Tales, the cocktail. And I think last year was something like almost $845,000 was paid to Mojo, which is a for-profit outfit. Now that's covering, but that just covers staffing, facility rental, blah, blah, blah. They are audited by the IRS, or they were recently, both organizations. And there were some quote unquote suggestions made that Mojo says they implemented immediately, all that kind of stuff. It does make a lot of money. Okay, and there is a lot of profit in there. Now, apparently, I don't know, you know, if Ann and Paul, how exactly they're talking about stepping back from this, if they're going to divest from Mojo. There is a new person who has taken over as a president, Melissa Young, who's worked for them for a while, is now the president of the organization. So trying to make some amends or make some changes. I mean, we'll see what that actually means as it relates to ownership, running the event, and all the other connected events that go on. Of course, you know, the daiquiri stuff, Tales on Tour, which is Tales of the Cocktail Abroad, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so we'll be watching what these changes mean. Now, here's one of the things I think is important to note, friends, is that, you know, Tales of the Cocktail takes place in the third weekend in July. And I guess there's some tough choices to make. People were really upset. A lot of people did not come to Tales, even though I believe the attendance was even up a bit. But they did not come to Tales out of protest. And I do not blame them for that. Okay. Here in New Orleans, though, it's part of a really important thing, because we know how the economy can be really, really slow in those summer months. We bring a ton of people, you know, 25,000 or so members of the service industry, bartenders, brands, these things. That's really the focus. It's a cocktail conference, if you will. And they spend a lot of money. And that helps out our service industry. That helps out our tourism economy, which is the basis of our economy in New Orleans, of course, tourism, as we talk about often on the show. So, you know, these things, when I guess my point really is, when Ann and Paul step in it, like they've done a couple times lately, and hopefully they do something right with this, is that, you know, if brands pull out or less people come, that hurts our economy. Now, we talk about some of these issues of the racial slur and these things, and yes, bad, but so many people that work in the hospitality industry, I'm not excusing what they did. Okay, don't get me wrong. But so many people that work in the hospitality industry are people of color in New Orleans. And the money helps them too, and helps the venues where they work. Now, we're not going to talk about the back of house and front of house divide. That's a topic for another time. Don't get me wrong. But I'm just talking about on a whole. So, you know, if this event does help the economy, it's sort of a catch 22, damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing, I guess. But we're going to pay attention to this. And the one thing that I always say here is sort of my parting thought on this is, you know, Tales of the Cocktail is a really good event on a lot of levels. But I think what's sometimes people need to realize, and maybe Ann and Paul are realizing this now, is that you create something that's great and then it becomes bigger than you. So you need to bring in other people, other things, other resources to do certain things well that you don't know how to do well. I've said that for a while about the event, and I really hope that this is the case where this takes a step forward, where other people with expertise are brought in to do these things. And the other thing maybe is that it needs to focus a little bit more on being a trade conference and professional development situation, and not try and be all things to the cocktail world. Just another little thought. We'll talk about that sometime down the road as more news pops up around this. We'll stay on top of it here on the show. Friends, thanks for tuning in. Next week, we've got some more stuff coming up. Don't know what that is. Usually don't. We figure it out as we go. Hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy Taste at the Lake. If you're there, we'll be at Jazz in the Vines at Pontchartrain Vineyards, and we'll certainly be at that dinner next Thursday at Cavern. Check us out on NOLA Drinks, friends. Have a great weekend. Be kind to each other. And until then, cheers, y'all.